From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's Constitution Tuesday. Class is in session on this edition of Washington Watch. To this day, the U.S. Constitution is still among the shortest but most enduring constitutions in the world. When James Madison and his fellow statesmen drafted the Constitution, they created our present system of government with its checks, its balances, and sometimes awkward compromises. The laws of the United States are based on this document, and for more than 200 years, Americans have held it as sacred. But today, many don't know what it says, nor the importance of the now 7,500-plus words of the document, which essentially is the contract by which we, as Americans, agree to be governed by our government. On today's show, we'll talk about what it says and what it means with Missouri Attorney General Josh Hawley, and also talk about how he has been speaking out about the security levels of social media platforms and the censorship against conservatives that exist. We'll also get his thoughts on Judge Brett Kavanaugh, the president's latest pick for the United States Supreme Court. We'll also be joined by Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry. He'll be here. We'll talk with him about the impact the U.S. Supreme Court has on states and the laws that the states pass, as well as his recent success in stopping an anti-gun bank. We'll talk about that. He'll explain what that means. And we'll explore reasons why Judge Kavanaugh should be confirmed to the Supreme Court with FRC's Travis Weber. We'll dig into a new document that the FRC has created. And let me encourage you to check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. Let me also remind you, coming up September the 21st, one month from today, the Values Voters Summit starts in Washington, D.C., and you can be a part of it. Great lineup already coming together. In fact, you need to hurry and register because we have our highest registration ever. People are excited, anticipating. Totally contrary to what the media is saying as conservatives go into the midterm elections. People want to be equipped. They want to be informed. No better place than the Values Voter Summit. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. All right. Before we get into the Constitution, we were talking about this yesterday, the social media platforms that are out there. There's more evidence building that they're censoring conservatives, but they're also kind of cashing in on citizens, taking information. And that's been a big concern for some leaders. In fact, one of the first to be out front taking on the big social media giants joins us now, Missouri Attorney General Josh Hawley. He's also a candidate for the U.S. Senate, but he was among the first to hold these big tech companies accountable for their behavior. Attorney Hawley, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's talk. I want to get your thoughts on Judge Kavanaugh. But before I do that, are you pleased to see that Congress is now stepping up and challenging the big tech companies, these social media platform giants?
Yeah, I am. I mean, it better late than never. But there's a lot to do here, Tony. There's a lot that we need to know. And this is why I launched an investigation into both Google and Facebook. I think I'm the only attorney general or law enforcement agent of any kind in this country investigating the two of them for their use of consumers' data. I want to know, what are they taking from us? I mean, what exactly is it? Our private, personal, confidential information? What are they gathering? How are they using it? Who are they giving it to? I also want to know if they're discriminating against the conservative viewpoints. And are they engaging in viewpoint discrimination, as we say in the law? And there's a lot of reports out there, Tony, that you know. I mean, for instance, going back to 2016, reports that Google was pushing to its users through its search engine, pro-Hillary news stories, disfavoring President Trump's campaign, disfavoring other conservatives. We need to know if that's true or not and how these big companies are using their market share.
Well, Josh, as I've seen this unfold, and we've long been concerned about this, you know, virtual monopoly that they have and how they've been using this data, but most concerned about how they have been choking down the conversation of conversatives. As I've seen it unfold, I have to believe that by you stepping out there first and being willing to take on what people thought were impenetrable, that you just couldn't take on these giants, that, you know, Congress saw that, hey, we can do something. And in fact, we had the majority leader on yesterday, Kevin McCarthy. There, I think there's more to come when it comes to Congress dealing with these social media giants.
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, they deserve to be scrutinized. They are the most powerful companies in the world, maybe the most powerful in the history of the world, Tony, just in terms when you think about how much personal information they have on everybody who uses their platforms. And really, who these days does not cross paths with Google or with Facebook or some of these other tech giants? But those two in particular, I mean, they touch the lives of almost every single American, and they need to be held accountable. I've always said I'm all for the free market, but I'm not for fraud. I'm all for the free market, but I'm not for monopoly. And I haven't prejudged the results of my investigation, but I do want the facts, and we're going to keep pressing to get them.
Attorney General Josh Hawley, on Tuesdays, we have what we call Constitution Tuesday. I know you heard the setup for that as we come in. But with the selection of yet another Supreme Court Justice, Brett Kavanaugh, by President Donald Trump, we see this as an opportunity as this process unfolds to really educate people on our system of government, the Constitution, the three branches, the judicial branch, all of those things which, you know, really aren't taught much in our schools anymore. And I want to get a couple of thoughts from you. First, I want to there's this push to try to say that faith must be left at the doors, you know, especially evangelical Christian faith. You have actually been a part of some of the recent Watchmen on the Wall pastors events that we've done, FRC has done in the state of Missouri. You've spoken there open about your faith. That move toward the left to interrogate, to suggest that somehow you must hide your faith or leave it at the door of government service runs straight up against what the Constitution has to say.
You know, absolutely, Tony, and I'd go even a step further. I think the right to religious liberty, the right to conscience, the right to respond to the call of God on your life is at the core of all of our rights as Americans. And the reason for this is these rights, the right to religious liberty, draws a line that says to government, you may not cross over this. You can't tell us what to think. You can't tell us who we can gather with. You can't tell us what to believe and how to act. I mean, all government can do is it can say, look, you have to follow your beliefs peacefully, and you can't force them on other people. But beyond that, our Constitution protects the right of every American to follow their conscience, to respond to God's call in their lives as they feel called. And it's a wonderful, noble tradition that has given us the freedom-loving, pluralistic country that we have. And it's a tradition and a set of guarantees in the Constitution worth fighting for.
Are you concerned about the growing hostility toward Orthodox Christian faith that we're seeing by the left in this country?
Yeah, very much so. And I'm deeply concerned in the breakdown of consensus about religious liberty. I mean, you remember, Tony, it wasn't that long ago. It was just 20 years ago that you had figures on the left in the Democrat Party who said that they believed in religious liberty, who joined with Republicans to pass overwhelmingly, for instance, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Correct.
Back when Bill Clinton was president. I mean, Clinton used to cite that, Bill Clinton did, as one of the great achievements of his presidency. And now you have the left saying that, oh, religious liberty is nothing more than an excuse for hateful Christians to impose their views on others. That is simply not true. And not only is it not true, it's dangerous. And this idea that we're going to shut down speech in the public square, you see this on university campuses more and more. If we don't agree with the speech, we're going to shut it down. That has become the predominant viewpoint of the left. It's something they're trying to do with faith-based speech. It is deeply dangerous, and it is against the core principles of our Constitution.
And I would say that those that are kind of in the middle, although it's a shrinking group segment of society, you know, people say, well, you know, I'm not really that religious. I don't participate in that. They, too, should be concerned about this silencing of the deeply held beliefs that people have, because eventually it's going to catch up with everyone. And it leads to this totalitarian viewpoint of only certain speech being allowed. And that is antithetical to what America is about.
That's right. You know, the right to speak freely, the right to worship freely, the right to follow one's conscience, these things guarantee the liberty of all people, even for those who say, I'm not religious at all, I don't have any particular religious beliefs. Of course, that's fine, and that's protected right under our Constitution, too. And you know what? The fact that government cannot tell you what you should or should not think, government cannot tell you whether you should or should not have a religious belief, that is something that believers in this country have fought for, and they are rights now guaranteed to all Americans. So, you know, that right to religious liberty is really the right to conscience that is held by all people of whatever faith background or none at all, and that's why it's worth fighting for, and that's why it guarantees us this pluralistic society that we have. There's a reason, Tony, that we have this great tradition in this country of lots of different religious perspectives within the Christian tradition, outside the Christian tradition, lots of perspectives, but a great tradition of religious tolerance and religious freedom, and it goes back to this ability of every person to follow their conscience and to do so peacefully.
And we recognize this for a reason as our first freedom, because everything else hinges on it. If we don't have that, we have little left, really no foundation for the other freedoms that we enjoy.
You know, it's back to this idea, I think, that religious liberty is a line for government that says, look, government, here's what you can do. You're supposed to keep the peace. You're supposed to provide for the public welfare, for the common defense. That's your job. Those are important jobs. What you cannot do is tell us what we're supposed to think or what we're supposed to believe or what we're supposed to do with our lives. That's not government's role. And it's that right of religious liberty and the tradition of religious liberty that keeps government in its place and creates this great sphere of freedom for everybody.
Attorney General Josh Hawley, before we run out of time here, if you were sitting down with the president's selection for the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh, what two questions would be at the top of your list?
I'd like to know from him what sources he would consult in deciding difficult questions of constitutional interpretation. What's he going to look to? And what I would hope to hear from him is, I'm going to look to the text of the Constitution first. I'm going to look to its structure. And I'm going to look to its history. Because what that would tell me is he believes in the Constitution the way the people wrote it. That he believes that it is the people's words, not the will of judges, not the will of bureaucrats, not the will of the media, that ought to prevail. And I would want to know, secondly, is he willing to be tough? Is he willing to stand up? And even if it's unpopular, even if the media and the New York Times doesn't like it, is he willing to rule the way he thinks the Constitution commands rather than the way that elite public opinion wants?
Two excellent questions, in my opinion. Josh Hawley, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Missouri Attorney General Josh Hawley. Okay, class is still in session. When we return, we're going to continue Constitution Tuesday with another Attorney General, this one from my home state of Louisiana. Jeff Landry joins us next. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting FRC.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. It's Constitution Tuesday, and class is in session. All right, we're going to continue our look at the Constitution, looking now to the impact that the courts, in particular, we're looking at the Supreme Court, the president's most current recent nomination, Brett Kavanaugh, how the courts affect the states and state law. And joining us for that discussion is my good friend, Attorney General of Louisiana, Jeff Landry. Jeff, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, it's always great to be with you, Tony.
Hey, before we jump into this discussion of the Constitution and how the courts affect what happens at the state level, recently you led an effort. You're a member of the State's Bond Commission, and you helped lead an effort that denied kept $600 million from going to Citibank and Bank of America over their kind of gun restriction stance that they've taken, their gun control stance, that, you know, the governor, in fact, Louisiana was in favor of. But you took a stand in support of the Second Amendment, and you won.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's the thing, it's actions like we took, of course, I couldn't do it alone without the help of great people like our treasurer, John Schroeder, Speaker Taylor Barra, Representatives Philip DeVille and Blake Miguez, and our Secretary of State were very helpful in getting us the votes necessary to pass. But it's an important lesson, Tony, I believe, in the fact that when corporations try to engage in social policing, they should be checked. Because that's not the jobs of corporations to use their market share prowess or their financial prowess to affect public policy. Public policy in this country has always been shaped inside of the capital houses of our various states and inside the capital of our country, or in Washington, D.C., or in the city council meeting rooms in our cities. Those corporations and individuals always have a right to express their position on those issues by virtue of petitioning their elected members. But when, you know, companies, especially with the financial market share of Citigroup and Bank of America, start to, you know, without any open discussion inside of some secret boardroom, concoct a policy that basically restricts people in Louisiana's ability to purchase firearms then I think those are the kind of people the state doesn't need to do business with.
Yeah, that thing goes both ways. I mean, what they were doing, Citigroup and Bank of America, understand what they were doing was no longer extending credit to firearm manufacturers or retailers to sell to persons under the age of 21. So if they want to do that, then the state has every right to say, okay, if you want to restrict Second Amendment rights, then we're not going to do business with you. And that's exactly what you did at the Bond Commission, correct?
That's right. That's right. We just said, look, if you're going to restrict our citizens, we're going to restrict your ability to do business with the state, which is we're not going to do any. So, you know, try to get out of our gun vaults, you know, or if you can't, then get out of our state.
Well, I think that's an important principle to be laid down by state leaders, because increasingly we see corporate America taking sides, as you said, in social policy matters. And that's best left to the representatives of the people being able to vote and voice their positions. And, you know, I think corporate America needs to be held in check.
Look, absolutely. It's a big and grave concern. I mean, we're seeing it in the social media space. We're seeing it in the IT space, where basically people in boardrooms, right, who live far away from mainstream America, right, from Americans that get up every day, work hard, love God, country, and their families. And these people want to determine how those people live. And that's just not the way that America was built. It's not a good recipe for a prosperous America.
I could not agree more, General Jeff Landry. All right, let me ask you this question, Jeff. We're talking about the Constitution, and now as the chief law enforcement officer, and oftentimes you are called, your agency defends the state laws. I've had laws that I passed in Louisiana that ended up before the Fifth Circuit as they were challenged in the court. You have to defend those. How important are federal judges when it comes to state laws?
Oh, my, Tony, I can tell you, you know, that's the one avenue, the one branch of our government, our federal government, that I think many Americans fell asleep at the wheel on. Most of the problems that we're facing in this country have been because we have allowed the federal judiciary to be infected by left-leaning and social activist judges. And these are judges that want to create public policy rather than rule on the interpretation of the law. And so, you know, the one thing I got to tell you, President Trump has been just, you know, phenomenal. It's picking. And then, you know, quite honestly, the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, has just been a stalwart in ensuring that we get these good conservative justices appointed to both the Supreme Court, the appellate court, and judges even at the district level.
When you see these activist judges and they're striking down laws that are passed by the people, I mean, they're going beyond their constitutional duty, oftentimes inflecting or imposing their views on so many of these issues.
Well, that's correct. I mean, look, most of the strife we're having in this country is because we're trying to live outside of the tenets of the Constitution. And not live within that particular framework. When we work inside of that framework, it works best. The judiciary, which of course is created under Article 3 of the Constitution, and of course, if I ask you, Tony, to rank things, and whenever you go to make a list, you always start with the most important thing, number one, and then work your way down. And so again, the judiciary was the third article created under the Constitution, and it was given limited power in order to check the other two particular branches so that those other two particular branches worked inside of the constraints of their constitutional structure. What we've seen is that the federal courts have deviated from that and basically wanted to abrogate responsibility of Congress and create the policy rather than to determine whether the law allows them to do so.
And it was envisioned that they would be the weakest of the three branches. Attorney General Jeff Landry, out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. As always, great to talk with you, my friend.
Such a pleasure to always be with you and your listeners. God bless. Take care.
All right. Jeff Landry from Louisiana. All right. Don't go anywhere. We're coming back with Travis Weber and more on Constitution.
feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. Let me remind you, coming up September the 21st, 1 month from today, the Values Voter Summit, gathering of conservative leaders from across the country. It's going to be a great event. You can be there, but you need to register soon. Go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over. Also, want to remind those of you who have not yet downloaded the tool that we've created for you. It's another tool for the Activist Toolkit. It is the Stand Firm app. It will, as we get into, you know, especially the fall, things are moving very quickly in Congress. You'll get legislative alerts. You still get those even now. But when the House returns, things are going to be lively. And you'll get those alerts with action items of what you need to do. Also, reminders of Washington Watch and other things. It's a great tool. So go to TonyPerkins.com. You can follow the links over. Or simply go to the App Store, Stand Firm app. Okay, it's Constitution Tuesday, and class is in session. Joining me now is Travis Weber. He is the Vice President for Policy here at the Family Research Council. And has a new publication that he has put out to help us through this process of the Supreme Court nomination of Brett Kavanaugh. You know, for the past 50 years, the Supreme Court has increasingly stepped outside of its limited role in our constitutional structure, issuing a growing number of activist and policy-driven rulings, which basically have no foundation in the Constitution. But it's allowed the court to amass great power for itself at the expense of what I would say is the freedom of the people. As we mentioned in going into the break, it was envisioned that the courts, the judicial branch, would be the weakest of the three. But in fact, it's become really domineering over the other two branches of government. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, let's talk a little bit. You've put together a piece in particular focused on the president's selection to fill the vacancy created by Anthony Kennedy's retirement on Judge Kavanaugh. Tell our listeners what's available there through this piece.
Yeah, sure. This is an FRC publication. It's available at frc.org/Kavanaugh. If folks want to go to the website, they can find it there. And this really goes back to, you know, the idea was birthed initially when Justice Scalia passed away and President Trump nominated Neil Gorsuch. that was obviously a big deal. And the issue came up. We looked at Judge Gorsuch at the time, now Justice Gorsuch, and examined his record and how he'd rule if on the Supreme Court. So now we're doing this again with Judge Kavanaugh. He's been nominated, obviously, to replace Justice Kennedy. And so we're going to look at his record, test and examine whether he has ruled as an originalist, and specifically focusing on issues of concern to Family Research Council, religious freedom, abortion-related issues, and family-related issues in his record, and then talk about how we want a justice to rule when they're on the Supreme Court, and kind of help folks understand that and see that it's important that you have an originalist, one who holds an originalist judicial philosophy, if they're going to take a seat on our nation's Supreme Court.
Well, Travis, let me ask you about that. And folks, by the way, in the next segment, Travis is going to stick around with me. We're going to be taking your questions on this Constitution Tuesday on issues related to the Constitution, the judiciary, this nomination, whatever you want to talk about related to that. It's Constitution Tuesday. You talk about someone who reads the text of the Constitution. That's what conservatives are looking for. That's what those who simply want a judge who is going to interpret the law according to the Constitution. But some say, they make this claim, that the Constitution is too antiquated. I mean, this document is, over 200 years, about 200 years old. How can it still apply to the modern world?
Yeah, I mean, the answer to that is if you don't like it, amend it. There's a process to modify the Constitution in accord with the will of the people, and that process is put in place so that the people ultimately remain governing the country. That power for how our country is run is ultimately with the people. And part of the reason that the whole nature of the nominations process has been so contentious is because the Supreme Court and other courts over the last 50 years or so have started to rule in a way in which they're reading rights and issues into the Constitution, producing policy outcomes instead of rulings on the Constitution, and thus taking power away from people in the states who want to pass a constitutional amendment or legislation in their states. And this happens at the federal level, too, with federal legislation being struck down by so-called constitutional rights. So this whole pattern of what's happened over the last 50 years really shows us the wisdom of the amendment process, keeping power in the hands of the people, as opposed to allowing the judiciary to read rights into it, really policy decisions and policy outcomes into it, thus take power out of the hands of the people. That's why it's so important that you have judges who look at the text of the Constitution, do not depart from the bounds of that text, plain meaning at the time the document was put in place at the founding of our country. And this is why it's so important that we stick to this, because it keeps the judiciary in its proper limited role.
All right, folks, you hear that music. We're up against a break. Travis is going to stick around. On the other side of the break, we're going to be taking your phone calls, your questions on this Constitution Tuesday. As Travis mentioned, the Constitution has a process by which it's amended, and it's been amended 27 times, 27 amendments to the Constitution. We're going to talk about that process, but also take your questions. So don't go away. More Constitution Tuesday here on Washington Watch when we return. Don't go away.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting FRC.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices, who owns free speech on the internet. The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
It's Constitution Tuesday here on Washington Watch. Class is in session. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. The board is lining up. Folks have questions regarding the Constitution. My guest, Travis Weber, Vice President for Policy here at the Family Research Council, is with me. And we're going to go to your questions regarding the Constitution, the judicial process, the nomination process. We're taking these weeks leading up to the confirmation of the president's latest nominee to the Supreme Court to kind of educate folks, answer questions, because these are, unfortunately, topics not taught in our schools anymore. And it's very important, because keep this in mind. This is what you need to know. The Constitution, it's 7,500 plus words. That's really the contract between the people and the government. That's what we agree to be governed by. And when judges go beyond it and find things in the shadows, or they treat it like silly putty and stretch it to encompass things that were never envisioned by the founders, that's problematic. And that's why I believe we've gotten to this point of being such a divided nation in many ways, because we're not, the founders had a process set in place to where we would work through these difficult issues as times changed, things needed to be modified. There was a process to do that. And we reached consensus that way as a people. But when you have courts stepping in and interjecting themselves, for instance, in 1973 with abortion, imposing this on the entire nation, unrestricted abortion through Roe v. Wade, that was not a consensus. In fact, almost 45 years later, it's evident we've not reached consensus. In fact, we're more divided on that today than we were in 1973. The same could be said of the court imposing same-sex created marriage by the courts. The American people were not at a point of consensus on that, and they will remain divided over that. All right, 866-372-7234. Travis, ready to take some questions?
I'm ready.
All right, let's go to Matthew in Oklahoma. Matthew, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, thank you for taking my call. How are you guys doing today?
We're great. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir, you're welcome. Hey, I just wanted to point something out and ask a question about it. I guess two things. One, the 10th Amendment says specifically that whatever is not listed in the first nine belongs to the state or the people, respectively. So when I read it, and as I understand it, majority of these decisions belong to the people, everything. And so D.C. should not really be sticking its nose where it doesn't belong. And then the second thing, I think, is that, let me just leave that there for now. And what do you think? Because when it comes down to it, they couldn't, if it belonged to the states, they would not have the ability to force things like taking prayer out of school or abortion or any redefinition of marriage. These would all belong to the states. And I think it really comes back down to local control. And I think our founding fathers and mothers really designed the Constitution, because I think the mamas were involved as well as the papas. Really, if you know, since you're married, you know, you make a decision, your wife always puts the input in there, which is the way it's supposed to be. So that generation decided the right thing, that local people would make those decisions, and that would trickle up rather than trickle down, I think.
Well,
what do you think?
I'm going to ask Travis. I'm going to toss this to him, but I do know that the wives were involved. I mean, there is a paper trail. In fact, Abigail Adams wrote extensively to her husband John. In fact, in that day when they didn't have telephones, they wrote letters, and so the correspondence is quite abundant between spouses, and you see the role. In fact, Abigail was very very engaged in John Adams' tenure as president. But to the 10th Amendment, I'm going to read this, and I'm going to toss it to Travis, to your point, because I think the 10th Amendment has been undermined by activist judges as they have made subsequent rulings that have chipped away at its foundation. The power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Travis?
Yeah, I mean, the 10th Amendment has been incredibly overlooked, especially in our modern era. There's incredible wisdom in the 10th Amendment, and really what it stands for is this principle that we know well in constitutional structure, that the Constitution divides power between different branches of government, but also between the federal government and the states. And so it says if something's not been given to the federal government, it's left to the states. The matters that I mentioned earlier and sort of some of the problems really derive from this, the courts grabbing power, and specifically the federal courts grabbing power and pulling matters out of the authority of the states and thus the people, the ability of the people to retain control over their lives and how they're going to live. So, the 10th Amendment and the principle it stands for, very much overlooked. We need to get back to a proper respect and understanding for the 10th Amendment, which would, if properly interpreted and incorporated into the way we view the Constitution, would limit a lot of these federal court and federal government power grabs that shift the balance of power in a real unconstitutional manner towards the federal government.
Matthew, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening in. I want to ask you, Travis, about that when we look at the 10th Amendment, and Matthew brought up the point about prayer. The court decided that the Establishment Clause and the other provisions applied to the states. That was a subsequent ruling to the adoption of the 10th Amendment.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got multiple issues here. One is simply the wrong interpretation, the erroneous interpretations of the Establishment Clause that we've seen in modern times, which have all occurred post, the adoption of the Constitution, obviously, and post, the period which we can look to how the people and the founders and the framers meant it to be interpreted. You not only have wrong interpretation of the Establishment Clause, on top of that, you have an ignoring and a dismissing of the 10th Amendment principle, the principle articulated there. So multiple reasons for some of these rulings to be chipped away at, to be recognized as too much of a federal government power grab.
All right, listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Travis Weber with me today, 866-372-7234. Let's go to James in Tennessee. James, welcome to Washington Watch. James, James in Tennessee, you there?
Can you hear me?
Yep, go right ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'll try to be concise. In the preamble of the Constitution, where it states we the citizens of the United States and so forth and so on, grants all these rights, and there toward the end it says that these rights are granted to ourselves and our posterity. Wouldn't it therefore be their intention that those rights were granted by them to United States citizens that were not even yet born?
Right. And your, what, is there a question there?
Well, yeah, the right to life and liberty would.
Oh, I get you. Okay. Well, that's a, yes. I mean, even where they say that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights in the Declaration of Independence, there was a clear understanding that we were created by God, that the right to life was preeminent. So you're absolutely right that there is a recognition of life in the Constitution, and there's even references to God, and you see them both direct and indirect. So there was a recognition of a moral authority outside of themselves. In fact, they in the Declaration appealing to the to God as the supreme ruler of the universe. So it's clear that there was a recognition, James, at that time. Travis, other thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, this is again a point where we go back to look at the text of the Constitution. I know Attorney General Hawley on earlier talking about the text of the Constitution is so important here, because if we look at the text, we see certain rights that are listed very clearly in the Bill of Rights, and certain constitutional rights that people can clearly avail themselves of when they're threatened by the power of government. But if there's not a right there, that doesn't mean the courts or a government actor can read something into that, including the made-up right of abortion. It's just not there. And the remedy is not to twist the document, manipulate it, to read it what we want it to read, but rather to follow the lawful amendment process, which ultimately keeps the power in the hands of the people, which is what the framers and our founders intended.
And I think James is, in part, where it's so clear, when you look at the Declaration and you look at the portions of the Constitution, judges have had to do, literally judicial gymnastics to be able to come up with, the right to abortion, to end the life of a child. I mean, they had to go into the shadows of the Constitution to find that.
Yeah, I mean, they really did. And, this gets at a point, kind of beyond constitutional interpretation. We recognize that one's worldview matters. It matters what someone thinks about the ultimate governing principles for their lives and how they view reality. Do they believe that every human being is created in the image of God and every human life has inherent value? Or do they not believe that? And if they don't believe that, they're going to bring that worldview and that outlook to the way they live, conduct themselves, including how they interpret legal documents, that includes the Constitution.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. And Travis Weber joins me. He's the Vice President of Policy. In fact, a new publication that is out regarding Judge Brett Kavanaugh. You can get a copy, actually download it. Go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over. Just kind of help you understand, where does he stand? Why would we be supportive of him? List all of that in this document. Go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over. It's Constitution Tuesday. Talk about the Constitution, all things judicial, judges, trying to help you as we work through this process to understand why it is so important. All right, let's go to Daniel in Louisiana. Daniel, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for your leadership and service.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the phone. Okay, I called a couple weeks ago, and I thank you for answering my question about question reference to the Supreme Court's decision to allow someone to burn the American flag. My follow-up question is, I agree 100% with that we have freedom of speech, but Mr. Perkins, and I also agree with what you said, that we are not free to say something to incite violence or how do you put those two together, and could a person possibly be punished even though they do have the freedom to do that? Could they, you know?
Please. Good question. And Travis, I'll let you take the first swing at that.
Yeah, so we have, obviously, what we've just laid out and explained is a principle of looking at the text of the Constitution, right? But the text of the right still has to be interpreted. What does, you know, freedom of speech mean? What does free exercise of religion mean? So the right way to do that is to look at what it meant plainly to the people at the time it was adopted, the time our country was adopted, because that's at the time the document was adopted, because that's the best way to fairly interpret the document as the people who gave their consent to it as law, as they meant it to govern them, right? And so we look at what free speech meant at that time. And certainly since the time our Constitution was put into place as our nation's governing document and ultimate legal authority, since that time, there's been many, many rulings that have departed from the plain meaning of what free speech protections meant at the time was adopted, including all sorts of interpretations to say that it protects things like pornography, it protects all sorts of related things which morally departed from the time from which it was, when it was adopted. So, you know, obviously this requires a bit more of a detailed examination when you really get into the cases and we can look at them. But the basic answer to this is we have free speech, but there are limits to that because you ultimately have to order yourselves as a society and be able to preserve order, or you don't have any society to even have a First Amendment that protects your freedom of speech. So there are limits, but our constitutional rights should be protected robustly in accordance with how they were meant to be interpreted and protected at the founding.
But in part, by the court deciding that this was speech and not action that was inciting violence, is essentially how they came up with saying that this is legitimate expression of opinion.
Yeah, I mean, there have been many things that the court has classified as speech that I would not say are speech consistent with, you know, the meaning of those words at the time the Constitution was adopted. So, we have to be careful and kind of take an overall look at these things and say, well, let's just go back
but
and faithfully applying it.
In part, a lot of these issues the courts deal with because Congress doesn't. And when Congress speaks to these things, it gives greater clarity to the courts. And I think in modern times, and we're up against the end of the program, but we're seeing that Congress punt a lot of these issues to the courts. And while we despise activist courts, in a large part, it's the result of a Congress that absolves itself, advocates its responsibility. Travis, thanks so much for joining us. Out of time, folks. Thanks for joining us on this Constitution Tuesday. Join us again next Tuesday. But until tomorrow, remember the words of the Apostle Paul. You've done all that you can do, and you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.